Hi there, and welcome to New Books in South Asian Studies. I'm your host, Ian Cook, and today we're talking about Nation at Play, A History of Sport in India by Ronojoy Sen. The book is published by Columbia University Press, and Ronojoy is a senior research fellow at the Institute of South Asian Studies and the Asia Research Institute at the National University of Singapore. Covering sporting activities from ancient times right up until the modern day, his book is at once broad in its scope and yet detailed in its analysis of key events. From football to the Olympics to cricket, the book explores how sporting life changes in relation to wider societal transformations. And I found it both highly readable and packed full of the type of stories that appeal to sports fans like myself. I had the pleasure of speaking with Ronojoy just a few moments before. Okay, so it gives me great pleasure to welcome Ronojoy to New Books in South Asian Studies. Let's dive straight into your book. And I want to ask you, what made you want to write a book on sports in India?
Yeah, you know, there were really two questions that were at the back of my mind. You know, one was the dominance of cricket in India. There are various other sports played in India, of course, but cricket almost has a religious like dimension in India. So that was one. You know, why this has happened. And the second was the astounding lack of success of India in international sporting events, considering India's population, which currently is over 1.2 billion, as well as its long engagement with sports. That also struck me as quite a puzzle. So these two questions had been sort of in my mind for a while as both a lover of sport as well as a social scientist. There was the other aspect, too, that there is hardly anything written on the social history of sport in India other than cricket, which has had some fine books, including Ramachandra Guha's a well-known book written, I think, in the early 2000s called Corner of a Foreign Field, which is really the social history of cricket in India going back to the British period. So these were the sort of three imperatives in writing this book. And I might use this occasion to quote a former teacher of mine, the well-known historian Dipesh Chakrabarty, who had once pointed out that, you know, social historians of India have paid more attention to riots than to sports, mm-hmm. to street battles with the police than to rivalries on the soccer field.
Wonderful. I think that sets us up really well for the discussion as we move on today. So maybe we should go back to the beginning, as it were, or the beginning of your book. And I want to know what sort of sports were played in ancient and in medieval India.
Right. There is actually very scanty records of sports in ancient India in particular. So what I do is I go back to the epics, the Mahabharata as well as the Ramayana, even though they are not, of course, in proper history in the sense that historians would regard history. But in a sense, as oral narratives, the kind of hold that they have on the Indian imagination, I thought, that would be one good source to go back to. And the Mahabharata does talk about archery, archery contests, as well as wrestling contests. In fact, the centerpiece of the epic, which is the war that happens between two sets of brothers, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, eventually decided after a very bloody battle, in a contest. Bhim and Duryodhana. So it's kind of ironical that the although there is a battle fought, there is actually a sporting contest that eventually decides the fate of the two warring clans. But if you leave aside the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, there are records of wrestling, and that's the only sport I think that has a fairly long lineage in terms of the historical records. And there is a 12th century text called Mannasolasa, which talks about wrestling. It's sort of a wrestling manual. Then we have another text called the Malla Purana from around the 15th century, which again talks about wrestling, techniques of wrestling, etc. And then we start getting records of foreign travelers, particularly Portuguese travelers, who had visited the Vijayanagar kingdom, which was a kingdom that flourished in southern India, roughly in travelers writing about the popularity of wrestling in the Vijayanagar kingdom as well as the royal patronage that it received. So I guess from what might be called the medieval period, we do start having records, and this starts becoming more, we start getting more records of sports, particularly with the Mughals. We do know that wrestling was popular, and we have records of wrestlers from the time of Babur. So we have mention of wrestlers in Babur's memoirs, which is called the Babur Nama. But we, in fact, have quite a bit on sports from Akbar's time in particular. And he wrote, both the Ayni Akbari as well as the Akbar Nama. We have accounts of both wrestling, which is not unnatural. And in fact, he says that Akbar is by far, the greatest wrestler in his kingdom. But what is more interesting is that Akbar had a fairly large stable of wrestlers. And the interesting thing is that the wrestlers were both Hindus and Muslims. So religion didn't really play a part in Akbar's patronage of sport. But what is particularly noteworthy of that period is the popularity of polo and Akbar's fondness of polo. And in fact, one of the things that Abul Fazl does when he's describing Akbar's love of sport is that he gives a spin, particularly to polo, where he says that Akbar is not merely playing polo for the sake of enjoyment, but then there are other aspects of superficial observers look upon this game as mere amusement and consider it mere play. But men of more exalted views see in it a means of learning, promptitude, and decision. It tests the value of a man and strengthens the bond of friendship. So there were other aspects of sport than just its entertainment value, at least according to Abul Fazl, during Akbar's time.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much. I was also totally captivated in your book by your account of what was called the 1911 IFA Shield. This was a football tournament with real far-reaching implications. So I was wondering, could you please tell us a little bit about this competition and why it turned out to be so important?
Right. Football, like several other sports, including cricket, had been introduced to the Indian subcontinent by the British. And, the British, wherever they went, I guess, carried the footballs and the cricket bats. And this was not true of Asia, but elsewhere too. And there were football tournaments which had been instituted from the late 19th century onwards. So the oldest football tournament was a cup called Durand Trophy, named after Sir Mortimer Durand, more famous for the Durand line. Tournament of the time. There were other tournaments, including there was one tournament called the Trades Cup. There was another tournament specifically for Indian teams instituted by one of the royal families, the Maharaja of Kuchbihar Trophy, called the Kuchbihar Trophy. But the IFA Shield, by the early 20th century, had really become the premier tournament of the time. It was held in Calcutta, which was then, of course, the capital of British India and also known as the Second City of Empire. And Indian teams had started participating in this tournament. And one of the teams that was taking part was Mohun Bagan, whose origins go back to the late 80s. And this tournament was, as I said, important. But what was the 1911 IFA Shield, why it was so important and why it has such far-reaching implications, was the fact that Bagan became the first Indian team, or the first native team, as they called it then, to reach the finals of the tournament. And its opponent was a British team. In this particular instance, Mohun Bagan's rival was the East Yorkshire Regiment. And that day, I don't want to go into the details of the match itself, But the end result was that Mohun Bagan beat East Yorkshire Regiment in a closely fought game, 2-1. And historical importance was that not only had Mohun Bagan won the Premier Tournament of the day, but that it had beaten an English team in a sport that was quintessentially English. So that was really the importance of the victory. And to just contextualize the victory, this was also the time when Indian nationalism was really taking off. So Mohun Bagan wins the Shield in 1911, and the Indian National Congress was formed roughly two decades earlier in 1885. Then in the earlier 20th century, you had seen what was the Swadeshi movement, which was really centered in Bengal, where Calcutta was located and the IFA Shield final was held. So this was really at a time when there was a lot of nationalist ferment taking place, and the Indian national movement, this was of course the pre-Mahatma Gandhi phase, but Indian nationalism was really taking wing. And in that sense, the Mohun Bagan victory had a real political dimension to it. And you know, this was commented on by both the English press as well as the Indian language press, and the Englishman, which was a widely read newspaper of the time, at least amongst the English speaking community, in fact said that, you know, Mohun Bagan with his victory had succeeded in what the Congress and the Swadeshiwalas had failed to so far, to explode the myth that the Britishers are unbeatable in any sphere of life. So I think therein lay the importance of the 1911 IFA Shield and the victory of Mohun Bagan over a British regimental team.
Let's turn from victory to failure, as it were. Right. I actually received a copy of the review copy of your book about the time the Olympics were going on, and as I was reading your book, I was of course reading the Indian newspapers, and there was a lot of soul searching because India had another dismal Olympics. So I was wondering, can you put this in a bit of context for us? Has India always fared badly at the games?
Yeah, India was not always bad at the Olympics. In fact, India competed while it was still under the British Empire. And from 1928 onwards, India was actually a premier hockey playing country. This is, of course, field hockey. And it won the Olympic title in hockey three times in succession, in 1928, 1932, and finally in 1936 in the Berlin Games. But besides hockey, India did not really have a particularly good record. It would send a small contingent of athletes, as well as people taking part in other track and field events. But hockey seemed to be the only event that India seemed to do well. And this tradition continued after India becomes independent. Of course, the Olympics are not held after 36, between 36 and 48 because of World War II. But when the Olympics resume in 1948, India again is the champion. And in 48, ironically, India beats England for the first time in hockey. In pre-47 India, England, oddly enough, did not take part in field hockey in the Olympics. Some say it might have been the fear of losing to India on the hockey field in the Olympics, but there is no recorded evidence of that. But the fact remains that India plays England for the first time only after becoming independent, and India wins its first title by beating England in 1948. And it continues playing well until the 60s, when India starts losing its dominance in hockey. And in fact, India won its last Olympic hockey medal in 1980 in the Moscow Olympics, which of course also boycotted Olympics. So some of the premier hockey playing nations did not play in the Moscow Olympics. So India really, one might say, from the late 60s, early 70s, was not really the kind of force that it was in hockey earlier. But in other sports, India never really had a good track record, except in wrestling. where India did win a medal in 1952. But other than that, it was hockey really where India had most of its Olympic success, which then changed from the late 90s when India got its odd medal in events like shooting, tennis, and more recently, India has actually been doing better, though nothing compared to India's size and history of sport. But India has been getting medals in a more diverse basket of sports, including boxing, badminton, etc.
Thank you. So far, we've managed to avoid talking about cricket really at all, but I guess we can't avoid it any longer. It is, after all, said to be a religion in India. And in Chapter 11, which is called 1971 and After, you look into how it became such a widespread and much-loved game. So I was wondering, why is it that this year is so important for the spread of cricket?
Right. Conventionally, many historians of sport in India point to 1983 as the year that cricket really takes off, because that was the year when India won the World Cup held in England for the first time. Of course, India subsequently won another Cricket World Cup more recently. It's true that 1983 was a signal year in the development of and popularity of cricket in India. But I point to 1971 because 1971 was the year when India actually beat England in England. And for India, till very recently, England was really the competitor to beat. Of course, in recent times, Pakistan also occupies a space. but especially in cricket, England was the team to beat. And India had beaten England in India earlier. But in 1971, India actually went to England and beat England for the first time. And this was also the same year India also beat the West Indian team, which was also a force to reckon with in those days. And the impact of the victory can be seen from an editorial that in the Times of India, the day after India beats England in England. And the editorial said, glorious to be living at this hour and to be an Indian. Days, months, year will pass, but our cricket team's magnificent triumph over England in England will remain unforgettable. And in fact, most of the newspapers had headlines, it was front page news when India beat England in England. So I would say 1971 was really the start of the period when cricket starts becoming a national obsession, although you can sort of take it back. The interest in cricket, of course, goes back earlier, and this I would ascribe to the huge popularity of radio commentary of cricket, which had started really from the late 1930s, but from the late 1940s, 1950s, that occupied a central part of sort of the Indian sports lovers' time. Because, if you know the nature of cricket, in those days, it was only test match cricket that was played. And it was usually played in winters in India. And so if a visiting team came to play, say, five test matches, so that was 25 days of cricket. And, the cricket matches lasted each day from, say, 9:30, 10 in the morning to 5 in the evening. So an entire day was really spent to listening to radio commentary. And this, I would say, really contributed to the immense popularity of cricket vis-a-vis other sports, where you had commentary for football, hockey, etc. But football is usually a 90-minute game; did not occupy that kind of time that cricket took up. Cricket commentary took up. So in that sense, I think radio commentary, coupled with the 1971 victory, had much to do with setting up the popularity of cricket in India, which then I think reaches another level in 1983, where India not only wins the World Cup, but it's also the year when in color television also starts spreading in India. So I think 1983 is also a crucial year, but I would say it all begins in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And now I suppose, well, now, yeah, you really can't avoid cricket in India, especially when a major tournament is going on. So I was wondering if you could tell us, is there a sporting life beyond cricket in modern India?
Right. Yeah, as I was mentioning, India has been doing, you know, reasonably well. And I keep stressing, you know, India's performance in international competitions is really quite poor if we look at India's population. But India's been, you know, winning medals in events like wrestling, boxing, shooting, and badminton. In fact, in the last Olympics, an Indian woman badminton player, PV Sindhu, won the silver medal. So there are there is a growing interest in sports other than cricket. Again, you know, football, one must mention that it's always been quite popular in India, even though India's performance has never been that great. Although in the 1950s and even in the 60s, India was really a top footballing nation in Asia. And then for various reasons, India's performance fell off. But football still remains quite popular. And what has happened, I would argue, is that there is an event called the Indian Premier League. In India, which is really a tournament involving city-based franchises. So cricket traditionally has, of course, been pretty much organized around the national sides playing each other, as well as within India, you had the less popular sort of the provinces or the states playing each other in various tournaments. But the Indian Premier League, which started in 2008, for the first time introduced the franchisee concept, very much modeled on the lines of the English Premier League or the basketball or baseball leagues in the US. And this has turned out to be incredibly popular in drawing in. And so these are matches roughly over 3 hours. So these are the 2020 games which are played. Each side bats for 20 overs. So this is a truncated version of the of a cricket match. Very much, I would say, the length of a normal Bollywood film in India, which they tend to be quite long, 3 hours plus. So this has drawn in not only the traditional fan base, but also an audience of women as well as a younger audience. And the incredible popularity of IPL has in fact had an impact on the other sports. So there are various other sports like, say badminton, which has also started its own Premier League, and so also football, even though there were different tournaments in India. In fact, the IFA Shield that we talked about earlier is still played, and there are other tournaments too. But there is a tournament called the ISL, which is now sort of modeled on the India Premier League, involving city-based franchises playing football. So too, we have also a Premier Hockey League, the PHL, where city-based franchises are playing each other. And now, more recently, we actually have a Kabaddi League. Kabaddi, for those who are not that familiar, is, again, an Indian sport. You know, I talked about wrestling and its long history. Kabaddi is also a game which goes back, some say back to the age of the epics. And we actually now have a fairly popular Kabaddi Premier League, which is being watched by a fairly large television audience and with city-based teams, and who very, very much modeled on the success of the Indian Premier League of cricket. So I think it's quite a vibrant scene in India at the moment. Whether that will contribute to a better performance by India in international sporting events remain to be seen, but I think the more sports that are played and at a reasonably high level, I think this will eventually, I think, have an impact on India's sporting performance in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, thank you so much. I mean, I really, really enjoyed reading a book. I'd like to recommend it to everyone at home. There's, I think, there's 12 chapters. We've probably only talked about a third or a quarter of them, so there's much more for people to get into when they do get round to reading the book. But I want to ask you that, now that this book is out, what are your current and future projects?
Right. You know, this project of mine wasn't really something very close to my sort of disciplinary training, in the sense, you know, I'm a political scientist by training, but I've also spent almost, you know, over 10 years working as a journalist, much of it in the Times of India in Delhi, but before that in a Calcutta newspaper called The Telegraph. And this idea of writing a book on sports in India really was a result of my years in journalism, where, you know, I was on the editorial page for almost 5 years, and you kind of expected to write on many different issues, and sports was something that I wrote on. And as I mentioned, I'm of course also a sports lover. So in that sense, you know, my years as a journalist was one of the imperatives of writing something that wasn't really, you know, close to my you know, discipline that I'd studied. So now I've actually again gone back. You know, my first book was on the Indian Supreme Court, and I have an interest in India's democratic and political institutions. So keeping that line of interest alive, I'm now currently working on a project on the institutional history of Indian Parliament. And so it's very different from this book on sport, but that's the project that I'm currently working on.
It's wonderful that you have such diverse interests. So we look forward to reading that book, I guess, a year or a few years down the line. Nothing sure. more for me to do today, apart from to thank you for coming on New Books in South Asian Studies. It's been a real pleasure to speak about your book today.
Great. Thank you for speaking to me.
Thanks so much for downloading the New Books in South Asian Studies podcast. I've been your host, Ian Cook, and today we've been talking about Nation at Play by Ronojoy Sen. I really hope you've enjoyed our conversation as much as I did, and I hope you check out the book itself. Thanks again for listening. Ta-ra!